Roni's Own Media and RoniesOwn.com proudly present the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. Everybody, welcome to episode 2 of the Once Upon a Time Fan Podcast. Your hosts are myself, Jeff Roni, and
Colleen Roni, his wife.
That is correct. And thank you so much for joining us again. And we are really enjoying this show. And this episode, we're going to be covering episode 2.
Right.
The thing you love the most. Go ahead and do some connections.
Connections and interesting points.
I'll try and do the lost ones first, and then we'll do the non-lost.
Okay.
Regina said, "You have no idea what I'm capable of." And what's interesting is there are certain lines that, for instance, "I will destroy you if it's the last thing I do," is something that she said in the pilot.
Which is also very much what is in a lot of the fairy tales. They frequently say that anyway.
Right. And then also, she said it in a fairy tale land, and she said it in the real world,
right,
too. So
right.
There's this kind of repeating of the same lines. And so she said, "You have no idea what I'm capable of." And Shannon in Lost said that in Exodus Part 1. Mm. And then also, Emma said the same thing.
Yes, she did.
Toward the end.
She did.
So it's this kind of the same line.
Right.
And this... the discussion between the Evil Queen and Maleficent, did I say it right?
Maleficent, yes.
Okay, she was in Sleeping Beauty.
She is the evil fairy in Sleeping Beauty, yes.
And when they were talking about the fate of the others, it reminded me of Jacob and the Man in Black kind of discussing, you know, the power struggle and all this. I mean, we're not talking about good and bad, but we're talking about two people that are discussing the fate of a bunch of people.
Right, right.
And so... I thought that there was a kind of a correlation there. There's also a ship steering wheel or a wheel in the window of the Storybrooke bakery shop. And you can see that as Emma and Henry walk by.
Mm-hmm.
And in the blog post I did for this, I also had a link to some shots of somebody took during the filming. And in one of the shots, there was a bear cleaner box that was one of the props that were on the shelf.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I couldn't see it. I looked a couple of times. But anyway, kind of interesting little lost things here and there. I'll put the link on the show notes for this podcast.
Sure.
When Emma and Mary Blanchard were having a discussion of who they are in Henry's book, the school bell rings. And it's almost like the story rings a bell. And it was almost like in the finale of Lost when they started to realize who they were, you know, on the Lost Island and the connection.
Right.
So when I looked at it, I went, wow, that's what it reminds me of.
Mm-hmm.
Another one, Henry, the Evil Queen's father, tells the Evil Queen that the choice is yours. And choice was a theme throughout Lost.
Absolutely.
It was your choice. You choose. I remember, you know, Jacob, you know, always talking to people. It's your choice. So anyway, Mary Blanchard also mentions that she feels that she and Emma have met before. There's also the cinnamon link. So there,
meaning in the coffee, in the hot cocoa and the coffee. You know, they all three apparently like cinnamon in their chocolate.
Right. And it could be something just within the show.
It's that connection. I think, like you said, these are the connections between people and each other, and they may not realize it, and that was a huge theme in Lost.
Right.
Huge, toward especially the last few seasons.
Well, now work through the non-Lost. The title logo segment, I remember that the wolf was there initially, and I think every week it's a different thing.
Yeah, it may very
now
well
it's the unicorn.
Right.
I remember in the pilot, there was a mobile in Snow White's room in the castle that had a unicorn mobile hanging over the crib.
Right.
It couldn't have been the crib because the child wasn't born yet. No,
they would have had the crib in preparation
for
it.
Okay.
So, yeah. No, that's fine. That's normal.
Make sure. All right.
Yeah.
So also, Archie mentioned the library's rusted old innards. And that's definitely pretty close to a Star Wars line that C-3PO mentioned. Mm-hmm. Next one. I'm not an Apple expert, but I'll tell you what. The apples that Regina had in her little basket were not Honeycrisp apples.
No.
I eat those. Yeah. They're not all red.
No. Those are Red Delicious. And it's interesting that they chose to call them Honeycrisps. But she talked about the fact that the Honeycrisp is a tree that bears fruit and it can last even as temperatures as low as 40 below. I mean, it was that she made a point of that. So
now,
that was interesting.
You know what that speech reminded me of was actually the Pinot Noir speech. That was in Sideways.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
How the grapes, you know, could withstand anything and live on the side of the hill all this. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It was interesting.
So these are the kind of things we're going to bring. Just all these little kind of connections to almost anything.
Right.
So then Emma mentioned Read Between the Lines, referring to the fairy tale book that Henry has. So this... there's all this kind of idea that it's not just the story, but it's something within the story that there's...
Right, things that are not being said.
Yeah. And on a side note, I just want to talk about this. We didn't mention it in the last podcast, but I think the biggest theme of this show is belief.
Mm-hmm.
What do you believe? What does it take for you to believe?
Right.
Do you have to see it? Or do you take it on faith, let's say? Or do you take it by someone else telling you?
Right.
What do you believe about yourself?
Right.
Well, what do you believe about your future?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe what other people tell you about you? Or do you believe it within yourself?
Right.
And do you believe what a book says about you?
Right.
I mean, it's the belief. I think that's a core thing.
That is a core theme, looks like.
Mm-hmm. And I think I think we're going to see it more and more and more. So the dark unicorn was in
Maleficent's
castle. I don't know what that's from, but it just kind of stood out to me. Normally, unicorns are white.
Normally, yes. But I believe, and I'm going to have to look this up. I believe there's actually a Russian fairy tale that has a black unicorn in it.
Okay.
Also, look it up.
Okay. And the evil queen visits Maleficent. Yeah, from Sleeping Beauty.
Which, by the way, her name, Maleficent, is basically, it's Mal, which is bad.
Mm.
That's just, yeah.
Well, she had a horn clip in her hair that looked like horns.
Yes, and also her staff that she carried around that had the orb on the top of it that basically held the curse.
Right.
It was guarded by a dragon. So like a dragon, a metallic dragon wrapped itself around the orb. So it was not like you couldn't just pull it right off of there. You had to break it. She had to break it to get the curse vial out of there.
Okay. And why is she blonde? I don't know.
Well, we don't know because you know what? We don't know. Maleficent, we don't know her backstory. And in, let's say, for example, the Disney movie, because I know that was another thing that I read too, was that the writers of the show, the creators of the show, they got permission, which is pretty much unheard of, from Disney, from ABC, to use a lot of the Disney characters and names and things. Because these Disney movies introduced items, facts, story, background, whatever, that weren't in the original fairy tale. So they kind of took a little license. So when they're going down these, you know, these paths and these stories, some of them are coming from the actual original fairy tale and some are coming from the Disney version.
Okay.
So anyway, we don't know what color hair she had in the Disney version. She was kind of bluish, greenish color face. And she always wore a hat that had horns. So that we don't know why she's blonde. Don't know if that's significant or not.
I think it's funny that the evil queen traded something for this sleeping curse. It didn't work, and then she's come to get it back.
Yeah, she kind of
basically funny.
Was like,
it was like a refund.
Ooh, yeah, exactly.
I mean, I was laughing. So, I was going, really?
Well, and it was kind of funny that she tried to be all sweet about it. And then, you know, even Maleficent, who was supposed to be pretty bad, which I kind of find interesting. Are they going to do a little twist to her like they did in Wicked, the play where the Wicked Witch of the West is actually not as wicked as we think she is? I mean, are they going to do a similar twist here on Maleficent and maybe she's misunderstood? I don't know. That'll be interesting to see how she plays out. If she does, I'm sure she will. You know, even she was, like, reluctant to give her that. She, you know, and the funny thing is, it's kind of like the queen has been taken a few times. Mm-hmm. If you think about it, she's almost been like swindled out of stuff.
Trades and deals are very important.
Oh, very much so. Well, because what's the currency? There is no currency. You got to trade stuff. And the funny thing is if you ask me, Maleficent knew that the sleeping curse could be broken. Right. Well, which ultimately we find out eventually that when Queenie goes to see Rumpelstiltskin, he basically tells her, he goes, look, all curses can be broken.
Right.
So obviously she didn't think that was the case. So she's put all her stock. She put all her stock in the sleeping curse. And that's all it was a sleeping curse.
Mm-hmm.
So that right in and of itself kind of makes you think she's just so enraged by what Snow White did. She wants vengeance no matter what. So it's interesting. And like I said, I think it's funny. You know, it's almost like they kind of are able to really easily pull the wool over her eyes.
Yeah. And I think the evil queen gets drunk with power.
Well, she does.
And she just wants
blind
power.
Rage.
Right.
It's a blind rage is what it is. And I mean, even when her father was like going, look, we could just totally start over. Let's just make a new life for ourselves. She's like, no, I want revenge.
Yeah. And we don't know what exactly happened.
Right. We don't know.
To her true love.
Right. We don't know who her true love is or what happened to him.
Or how... Or if he is destroyed, or if he is was he translated to the real world?
Maybe it's Sheriff Graham.
Could be. I mean, that was one of the searches, the questions that Search had pulled up my blog post.
Yeah,
is Sheriff Graham the evil queen's lost love?
Right.
In the fairy tale land.
Right.
So you know, another idea is a whole Lady Hawk thing where the lovers cannot be the same human entity. In the sunlight.
Right.
Or in a good land. And so they can't ever be together.
Right.
So,
right.
I mean, I just toss that out
there. Yeah, and that's possible. So, who knows?
I guess that the black unicorn was something very dear to Maleficent.
Well, it was like her pet. Because when Maleficent, or when Evil Queen was in there and she was basically going, okay, you're not going to give it to me nicely. I'm going to take it.
Right.
She pulled all the weaponry from the room, which was kind of funny. She pulled all this weaponry and then turned her hands and all that was pointed at the queen, at Maleficent. And Maleficent's like, yeah, please bring it on. And then she realized, oh, that's not going to do it. Okay, let's take your pet out.
Right.
So then she's like, no. And that's when she, you know, kind of jumped in front of it. So obviously that unicorn means something. Maleficent.
There, to me, there are a lot of Star Wars direct copy stuff.
Well, and I'd wager if you probably pin these guys down, they would tell you they're huge Star Wars fans.
When the Evil Queen walked into the wedding in the first episode, she pushed him aside, basically using the Force power to throw him like Yoda did to the two guards inside the Emperor's room.
Right.
You know, he just kind of pushed him away. Or knocked him into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing here is when she gathered all the weaponry and pointed them and threw them. You know, it's just very similar to, you know, the Force.
Right.
You know, in a Jedi.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of the battle between Yoda and Count Dooku.
Right.
So,
yeah. Because, you know, Dooku bent that thing over and tried to drop it.
Right.
On Yoda, and Yoda stopped it and gave him enough time to escape.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I see a lot of the whole Jedi Master type of activity.
Oh, very much so.
You know, and even the force field that Maleficent put in front of her and the unicorn.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was, you know, looked like on the Gungan planet, Naboo.
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
You know, the kind of protecting thing. So, yeah, I'm a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah,
anyway, that's what I really noticed.
Yeah.
So the blind witch that was around the circle when the evil queen began the first try at the dark curse.
Right.
You did a little research.
Well, I did, and I was trying to find out. Okay, well, first of all, was she really blind? I mean, was she blind because she was blind, or were her eyes sewn shut because she was? I don't know. And I took it to be that she's blind. So to me, that sounds an awful lot like the witch in Hansel and Gretel. It may be her, or it may be a whole other fairy tale I'm just not aware of. So that's where I kind of think that's who she might be, but we'll see.
Okay. Henry mentions the hero to Emma. The right. hero never believes the story at first. That's what makes it a great story.
Right.
And there's a writer named Joseph Campbell. Actually, he studies themes and myths, and he brings out threads and themes and stories that are the same to people. And mm-hmm. so throughout history, these themes are in these stories. And George Lucas was one of his greatest students. And Star Wars is full of these things. And right. so the reluctant hero is one of those themes where, you know, Luke was asked by Obi-Wan, you know, you got to come to me to save this princess. And he goes, I can't go. Are you kidding? I got to stay here. I got things to do. And then obviously when, you know, his uncle and his aunt are killed, then he comes back and then he takes up the task.
Right.
And so, you know, the reluctant hero is always the one where it's always asked of the hero, come and do this task. And the hero says, no, I'm either not good enough, whether we got a Moses issue in the right. Bible.
Right.
I'm slow of speech. I can't do it. Or we have somebody that I'm not a hero type, you know, and then through the process, they realize that, yes, they are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's another really interesting correlation between the
right,
two.
Right, right.
So Dr. Hopper's office looks very much like a forest. And as a yeah. matter of fact, a lot of the wallpaper in the mayor's office and in Granny's Diner
oh, yeah.
Has the a lot of breakfast. Forest, the bed and breakfast. Mm-hmm. It all has foresty look to it.
Right, right. It's all very, very enchanted.
Right.
It's got that, you know, it's got a very natural nature feel to it. Yeah. And I mean, everything about Dr. Hopper's office, I mean, the color scheme, it's green and yellow and like deep rich wood colors. And yeah, it's, and even the way he dresses.
Right.
Is reminiscent a little bit of actual the Jiminy Cricket dress from how he was dressed in the Disney cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
In Pinocchio.
Except in Pinocchio, I think he had a red scarf, but anyway.
He might have, but it was, yeah.
So, a couple of things about Dr. Hopper's office. One is when he was on the phone to the mayor on the little, you could see the thinker, little statue on something behind him.
Yeah.
And then also when Emma was leaving, there was a shot of drawers or something. On top, there were some mushrooms,
mm-hmm.
a number of mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, mm-hmm. this is kind of convey the idea of a forest
right.
or something. Little things that...
Well, and being a cricket, he would be small enough that he could walk among underneath the mushrooms, especially so they were up higher, right?
Right.
Yeah, so he's very
yeah,
much...
Yeah, true. And it's very interesting in the fairy tale world that they have a magnifying glass
to see him
because he's so small he's
the, right
on the war council table
yeah.
So the evil queen nears Rumpelstiltskin's cell as a rat, and then when she turns from rat to human, she goes and becomes this black smoke,
right?
So again, it's another allusion to Lost, as well as that's how she changes from form to form. To me, Rumpelstiltskin I think sounds like Heath Ledger's Joker in The Dark Knight.
Really?
Yeah. It's really that type of just kind of crazy staccato, the way he talks. But that's what reminds me.
I'll have to pay attention next time I hear him speak. I didn't pick that up, but that doesn't mean anything because I was really focused a lot on the background stuff because I know yeah. there's Easter eggs in the background all over the place.
Right. So the evil queen asked Rumpelstiltskin what went wrong to the first attempt, and he told her that it requires a heart of what she truly loves, which is her father,
right.
Henry, which we find at the end of the episode. But Joseph Campbell, one of the things he said was, for someone to receive full and greater power, they have to kill their father. And there was a scene in Return of the Jedi when the Emperor said, strike him down. He was telling Luke, strike down Vader and take your father's place at my side.
Right.
So there was always this kind of vengeance and violence to take a more powerful place.
Well, and not necessarily to kill, although that is the theme in Star Wars.
Right.
But I was also thinking of type, basically kind of usurping, because I think mm-hmm. that if you go even biblical, you know, Satan trying to tell Jesus, hey, you take over and be the one, you know, kind of worship me and it's that whole leave your dad, get him out of the picture. That's what I see, is get your dad out of the picture.
Right. And two, I think there was a point I remember that when Rumpelstiltskin was saying, you know, there's a price for what you're asking.
Right.
And then she kept saying, you'll have an estate and this and that and this and that. It kind of reminded me of the Jesus and the devil in the desert,
mm-hmm.
you know, just offering all these things, you know.
Right.
So anyway, a long stretch, but. Anyway,
and he really only wanted one thing,
right.
Her undying loyalty, basically, as long as he said, please do whatever I ask.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, in a way, he's more powerful than her.
And exactly.
We'll probably see that as time goes on.
He holds all the cards, man.
Mm-hmm. So, in the mayor's office, there's a horse statue over the fireplace, which that was the first thing that she killed and
got
the
heart.
Yeah,
her prized steed. And he said, are you kidding me? You think that for a curse this magnificent and this, you know, powerful, as a horse is going to do? No, it's got to be something more. And that's where she kind of went, oh, there's nothing more. Snow White killed, you know, destroyed that. And he's like, no, there's something else. So it's an interesting.
And the color scheme of her house plus the ante office, or
right.
I guess her mayoral office, is
right.
black and white.
Right, which is interesting because her actual office there in the probably what would be considered the city hall, her office is black and white, but the outer yeah. office was bright yellow.
Right. And I think, me, that she struggles because she has a son.
Mm-hmm.
But she struggles to be good. But she's evil.
Well, she's very evil, but the funny thing is, you know, I mean, she's evil. And even Henry says she's evil. And Emma kind of goes, no, she's not evil. He goes, no, you don't understand
right.
it. My life sucks. She's terrible. I think it's that she's bitter. And she's got something she won't let go of, which is very much with the queen. That's the problem I see with the queen. She had something. And again, I'm hoping we'll get to see how Snow White, quote unquote, played a part in this.
No, I want to know that. I want to know who wrote the book. I want to know why Rumpelstiltskin's in jail.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's questions that
there's
have.
There's a lot of questions.
There's a little statuette that had multiple faces.
Yeah, and I looked at that and I went, okay, three faces on a vase. It wasn't a statue, it was like a vase. And I thought, that might be the three fates, which is Greek mythology. That's definitely possible. Or then there was, the three blind fates.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see if that plays a part at any point in time. Again, a lot of this stuff just could be, oh, that was kind of an unusual thing that they found and the prop department or, you know, set decorators decided that would work really well. But I still think there's a lot of significance in most everything that they put in these shows.
Right. And Dr. Phil's taking copious notes.
I'm sure
about me.
Yeah, not so much.
And when Emma leaves, Regina puts her arms on the two high arms of the chair.
Oh, yeah.
Very much, to me, like a classic throne.
Very much, yeah.
You know, and she was very sure of herself.
Right, sat very regally.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of warnings about revenge and violence and power is seductive and all this stuff. And those are huge within Star Wars. And I think just, you know, mythology and stories.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't take the easy path. You got to take the hard path. And revenge, beware. And Rumpelstiltskin said vengeance,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's costly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't.
Right.
It costs you.
It's not
you.
Easy. Yeah,
yeah.
It's going to cost you and it's going to cost you dearly.
Yep. So, well, we got an email and they were asking about Snow White's guard.
Yeah.
And there was a.
The coat of arms that was on the.
You got. Yeah, there's a paper. I think you're writing it down.
Yes.
Somewhere.
I took notes on that. That there is on the coat of arms that her guard is wearing. And we can probably get an image of that, I would think, to put on the show. You focus in, this is in episode one, where the prince is going in to take the baby into the wardrobe. The first thing you see is that focus is very directly on this coat of arms on the shoulder of one of the guards that is Snow White's and the prince's guard. The interesting thing is I started doing some research. You know, it was like, the email was, well, is there any significance to this? So I looked at it and I did some checking research, and which I've always been kind of fascinated anyway. I have a really interesting coat of arms for my family, my maiden name. Won't go into that, but all the characters, the colors, the placement of everything means something. For example, it's a white basic background with seven little blue and white flowers, and then a red single chevron, and then under that is a blue and white outline of what looks like kind of a lion or a big cat or something, right? So I started doing some research on that. Okay, so colors. Again, colors play a huge part in heraldry. First thing is white signifies peace and sincerity. And the color that they used for the blue, it's almost a blue-green. So I picked both blue and green to kind of get the qualities for blue and green, since it may very well be that they intended that. Blue equals truth and loyalty. And green signifies hope, joy, and loyalty and love. So those are very, you know, admirable, wonderful qualities that obviously Snow White and Prince Charming would have. Red typically means a warrior or a martyr and military strength and magnanimity. The animal, to me, looked like a panther, which is fierce but tender and loving to children and will defend her children with her life. So I think that the panther is basically Snow White. And the flowers, there were seven of them, which I would be surprised represent the seven dwarves. They're white roses, which signify love and faith, charm, and innocence. So I think there's a lot to that coat of arms. Maybe the show's creators just randomly picked what looked like good items to put on a coat of arms. But I kind of think they did a little research, and that's where I think it came from.
I also saw white flowers on Mary Margaret Blanchard's dress Regina came to talk to Henry at the school.
Exactly. So, exactly. Yeah. And similar, they were very similar in shape to the flowers that were on the coat of arms. Absolutely.
We're not going to have any news because we're still kind of catching up with things. And any news that we talk about is going to be more recent. So we're going to wrap it up here. We hope you enjoyed the episode. And the key is, it's not just us, but it's also you.
Right.
So what did you like about the episode? What did you think it was missing? But also add to it. What did we miss? We're not going to catch everything.
No.
And so let us know what you thought. Did you agree? Did you disagree? Was there something that you noticed that we didn't see? Let us know. So we're going to give you some ways to get a hold of us. The main website URL is onceuponatimepodcast.com. Pretty easy.
Yeah, it's easy enough.
And we also have an email. It's oncepodcast@gmail.com. Send us all your questions or input or whatever. We also are on Twitter. It's OUAT podcast. So it's twitter.com/OUAT podcast. And there's also a voicemail number if you're brave enough to call. I'm sometimes not brave enough to call podcasts and leave stuff.
Right.
But we'll be nice and we'll play it and we'll get you on our podcast, and that'll be really cool. So it's 657-333-0626. So those are a number of ways that you can get a hold of us, and we really appreciate you listening and sharing it with your friends. And we're really enjoying Once Upon a Time, so we'll be here next time.
Sounds good.
See ya.
Bye. Bye.